Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach.
Give me great food.
Tacos.
Give me adventure.
Hiking.
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise.
Give me some smiles.
Cheese.
Give me more beaches.
Beaches.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You hear that sound? That's the sound of grapes being crushed. And that one simple act seems subtle enough, but in fact, it's what makes wine wine instead of just grape juice. From the moment the juice spills from inside of the skins of the spherical fruit, the transition from grape juice to wine is already underway. At this point, there are basically two ways this could go. The person making the wine could decide to add yeast, or they could decide to do nothing. And the ambient yeast that is on your skin, in your hair, in the air, and pretty much everywhere will come into contact with the grape juice. And the juice, for now, is just fruit juice. It's sweet and sugar-filled. Now, yeast love sugar and immediately begin happily munching all of it. Now, of course, after we eat, we also create byproduct, and the same is true for the magical yeast, but their byproduct is carbon dioxide and ethanol, which is better known as alcohol. So from this moment on, there are decisions to be made about how to raise the wine. And one decision that could be made is whether to do anything else at all. And when the choice to do nothing in both the vineyard where the grapes are grown or in the cellar where the wine is made, that decision to do nothing is called non-interventionist winemaking, or more commonly, natural wine. Nothing added, nothing taken away. We turn now to our producer, Celine. Celine is in Berkeley, California, embarking on a guided wine tasting with a fabulous natural winemaker, Jared Brandt of Donkey and Goat Winery.
I'm at Donkey and Goat Winery, where they're making award-winning red and white blends of natural wine.
So I think when you taste, and one of the beauties of blind tasting, I think it's really hard to get the grape, the varietal right.
I'm chatting with Jared Brandt, who's the co-owner and co-winemaker. Okay. And there's also for the wine bottle. Taste it. Sound of me slurping.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's Merlot of all things.
It tastes like cider.
There's definitely a cider component. I get that. So it's a Petit Natural or Pet Nat, which means what we did is why it was fermenting, we bottled it. So it does have bubbles, not a lot of bubbles. Instead of adding sugar to make the bubbles and yeast, we just use the naturally occurring sugar in the grapes. Like we do it while it's fermenting. It reminds me a little bit of like a cherry Jolly Rancher. Like there's a cherry and also like a candied apple. Like, you know those apples that you get like dipped in caramel? Mm-hmm. I guess it's not candied apple. It's a caramel apple.
Yeah.
I get like that kind of flavor. There's definitely like
Just the apple.
The apple, yeah, it's really clear to me.
Is natural wine more connected to terroir?
The idea of not manipulating the wine, which I think is core to the natural wine, is very specific to the terroir. If you're not trying to kind of change the flavor profile or enhance it, what the land gave you and the grapevines gave you should hopefully come through in the glass. We got started doing skin macerated white wines because we had a vineyard where it was very hard to get the wine to go dry naturally. Because of the deficit of nutrients when you pressed it off the skins immediately. And if you left it on the skins, it would go dry in 15 days instead of like a year. And so to me, it's more terroir specific because you don't have to do any manipulation to get it to go dry. But I think that's kind of a debate. We do a lot of foot stomping where we want to give it a light skin contact. So like we'll foot stomp it like at 8 a.m. and then at 12 o'clock we'll press it off. And so that gives it some of the tannins from the skins, but it's not over the top. And feet are really a great, I mean, it's kind of a miraculous thing, which is hard to replicate because, like, your foot actually has a lot of pressure, but at the same time, the pad of your foot is soft, so you can't break seeds. And so, like, if you're trying to break up a grape, but you don't want any of the hard, seeds have harsh tannins in them, I'm not sure you can really do it mechanically. Like, you get rollers, but they're not really that soft, and you see broken seeds. But if you do it with your foot, you don't ever see that. And then on top of it, it gets even more complex if you do the stem. If you run a stem through a roller to break it up, it like breaks it up all the way, and you get all these weird, harsh, really green flavors more than anything else. If you do that same process with a foot, you don't get those.
Can you share your thoughts and perspective about natural wine movement in California? And has it been well received?
So this is a twofold answer for me because we have been making wine in the same style since 2003 in California. In 2002, we did in France. So until 2000, probably 11 or 12, California hated it. Californians were into very big, ripe, highly manipulated wine, and being overly general, giant generalization, but there was years where we sold more wine in Sweden than we did in California. And I think in general, Californians at that stage, and the wine industry in general in the United States, was really seeking these really big wines. And to successfully, the kind of the components of making like a really big red, they typically had a little bit of residual sugar. And so as a result, they couldn't be made naturally. Because if you left the residual sugar in them and you didn't do something to stabilize it chemically effectively, it would re-ferment in bottle. So I think starting in 2010-11, there was a radical shift. And I think this is worldwide. I think a lot of people in general are more interested in authentic food, simpler wine, knowing the producer, knowing that it wasn't made in a factory. It wasn't made in a chemist shop, that it's made by, like, you know, sun and water and soil. Napa is this weird anomaly. Like, we work with organic vineyards, and there's very few organic vineyards in Napa. And it's this anomaly to me because, like, they have infinite money. And maybe not right now because I think the wine market's going through a radical change. But 5 years ago, you know, they could sell as much wine as they made. And to be organic, there's a little bit more risk. That said, I think Napa's kind of late to the natural wine world. Like, if I thought of iconic natural wines from California, there probably wouldn't be one from Napa on the list.
I'm Alex.
I'm Galit.
Our next guest, Alex Shulkin and Galit Shahaf, are a husband and wife making wines in the Adelaide Hills of South Australia. So Australia is huge, huge continent. Adelaide Hills, where is it exactly, and what are some notable things about Australia?
So, well, it's South Australia, self-explanatory. Adelaide Hills is in area, I guess, around Adelaide itself, slightly more elevated. There is a lot of, well, a fair bit of grapes grown in South Australia. In fact, in Australia, every state has a nickname, and South Australia is the wine state. Within that wine state, there are a few different wine regions, and Adelaide Hills is arguably more focused toward high-end grape growing. And so it happened that natural wine in Australia started happening in this area, probably less than 10 kilometers from where we are right now, about 15 years ago. And the rest is history, basically. It's still is kind of an epicenter of natural wine in Australia, but of course now it's a lot wider, and natural wine is made in every state wherever they grow grapes, which is every state except the Northern Territory.
Mm-hmm. And I remember back in the, let's say, late 90s, early 2000s, Australian wine had a reputation internationally of being really inexpensive, really high in alcohol, made with kind of overly ripened grapes. And of course, the yellowtail explosion happened around the same time, in which they became one of the largest wine brands in the world, and many other multinational wine companies were kind of chasing them and chasing this standard style of high alcohol, kind of sweet, powerful wine. Obviously, that is so far away from the kind of wine that you all are making. So can you help us understand in a broader sense what the transition was that occurred in the Australian wine market over the last 15 years?
It's not unique to wine or natural wine or anything really. It happens in every aspect of life and industries and production, etc. Things take a direction and then they accelerate in that direction, I guess. People get excited and then it just goes a little bit too far. And then sooner or later, people start realizing that it's in fact gone too far, and then the pendulum starts moving backwards in the opposite direction. Right now it's just moving away from those very extracted, very ripe, just the way you described, wines. I wouldn't be surprised if in 20 years time we'll find ourselves in the big oak, big ripeness zone again.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. The cyclical nature of wine consumers isn't so much about them being wine consumers, but just human beings. So then the point is well taken, that I think is a good perspective for us to consider natural wine as kind of a organic outgrowth, or the other side of the pendulum of, as you say, what the global wine market was a couple decades ago. So then in your own words, can you all help us understand, when we're talking about natural wine, what is it that we're talking about?
It's a bit of both, really. When we arrived to Australia 10 years ago, we were not aware of natural wine, and not many people, frankly, were. But we were lucky enough to run into it basically as soon as we came here. And we got really excited by that. Didn't take long for us to get stuck into it and start doing it ourselves. It's only been 8 years, but the idea of natural wine has evolved a lot. We have evolved a lot, and we're still figuring it out and adapting and learning.
And I mean, what was it about natural wine production that felt resonant with your own ideas or sensibilities that made you want to start producing wine this way?
Many of them would follow them quite fanatically, whereas in our world, the only rule that we follow is that the rules do not exist. There is not a single rule that applies universally to every single wine.
We try to live more sustainably in our life, generally speaking. We try to consume food and pretty much everything that comes in a more sustainable way. And I think like part of this evolution of natural wine, what Alex was speaking before, it's not just about the way the wine is grown and made. And it comes to furniture that you buy, and it comes to everything pretty much. And now we're going into this mode of more handmade, more small producers, and more self-expression as well. So something that is a bit more fluid in a way. And I think it speaks to both of us in what we make.
Do you sell most of your wine in Australia?
We do, and that's a choice. We do export wine because we want to share, I guess, our ideas and our wine with the rest of the world. On the other hand, from the sustainability point of view, we don't quite like the idea of our wine accumulating all those food miles. Mm-hmm. So I guess we try and
balance it.
Mm-hmm. send a bit, but not too much. And we export to Japan, to Denmark, to Taiwan and Korea and the US. And we actually send a fair bit of wine to the US. Our distributor is Tess Bryant. When I say we send a fair bit, it's not a lot on the general scheme of things, but it is a lot for us because we don't make that much wine.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tess Bryant is a really good friend of mine. I love her, and she's actually the first person who introduced me to your wines as she developed an entire import company here in the US based on natural winemakers from Australia. And so I wasn't even aware really of the breadth of this movement in Australia until I trust that you are in good hands in working with her. Have you heard how much of the discourse around natural wine is kind of has this contentious or confrontational tone? Is that something that is unique to the US in this moment? Or are you also seeing that from the press or maybe sommeliers or consumers in Australia who might find the natural wine movement as perhaps frivolous and the best case, or maybe even harmful to some other producers in the worst case? For instance, one of the common refrains here in the States is that, you know, without any standards, that perhaps the lack of consistency, you know, among the producers who are making wines naturally could in effect undermine people who have the same environmental principles.
The lack of consistency among those who make natural wine cannot undermine those who don't make natural wine, because it would, if anything, it would undermine those who do make natural wine.
Sure.
The way I see it.
Yep.
When it comes to people who choose not to position themselves as natural wine, well, we don't quite position ourselves as natural wine. That's just what we do, and that's what we are very happy to explain what we do. It appears on our website in a very transparent fashion. And the word natural is not used there very often. So basically, in a way, natural wine is something that people would refer to our wine as, but it's not necessarily the term we use that often. We're really not trying to undermine anyone else's effort, and we do respect our colleagues who choose to make wine in a different way. That's perfectly fine, but we do see winemaking as an art form, and because of that, and mainly because of that, we really try and move away as far as we can from any standardization, because that would be that would doom any kind of an art form.
Mm. So in summary then, you are basically saying that You know, natural wine is a term that doesn't have a rigid or standard definition. Natural wine, in its essence, is really about a non-intervening style of winemaking that adds nothing at all to the fermenting grapes. It is just the purest expression of wine without any inputs, and the output being, you know, whatever the grape has to say.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull.
A lot of artists in general, people that are very creative, sometimes tend to overthink. That's one of my number one rules. Don't ever overthink. You can think ahead, but don't overthink. And what I mean by that is when they start to write a record, they're like, oh, that's not the line. Oh, that's not this. Oh, it's not that. And everybody has a creative process. I'm not knocking it. For me, I just let it flow.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you think that overall this natural wine movement and this language around natural wine, has it been more harmful or helpful in furthering the wine drinking world?
And probably benefits the whole
consumer,
but not only the consumers, but also the winemaking side, because more and more conventional winemakers would get in touch with us and just come and hang around and taste the wines. And it would be very clear that they're trying to suss out what is going on. And is it really true that we can get away with that kind of a winemaking? And getting away with things is probably key here. Quoting a famous person who said, art is what you can get away with. It really drives more conventional winemakers to explore those horizons further. So I think in that regard, it's a very positive impact on the whole industry.
I love that. But I do think that one part of it that is not commented on enough, Gaylett, you mentioned the implication being, well, what is a natural wine, or what are the things that are added to other wines that we might not be aware of. And you know, as we're talking about it as a trend, it actually kind of sets up a change in consumer behavior and patterns, which in effect sets up a change in behavior for conventional producers. But I believe that one of the upsides of the movement that you're speaking to is that it has actually, in a very short amount of time, significantly shifted consumer curiosity, shifted the behavior. And to hear that you now have conventional winemakers coming to you all asking about the viability of making wines naturally, I'm actually really encouraged by that outcome, regardless of how we get there, really. And as Jarrett Brandt from Donkey and Goat says,
I think it's more like it's just like kind of returning to an older school way of doing things with less manipulation.
We'll be back next week to hear more from sommelier Amanda Smeltz as we continue our exploration and learn about what natural wine is, how it's made, and importantly, what it represents. I'll also be taking you on a journey very special and personal to me. We will go to the birthplace of natural wine, which is in fact the birthplace of wine itself. And then I will lead you on a special tasting to share with you what I've learned throughout my career as a recovering sommelier, and you can sample and enjoy a glass of wine along with me. So stay tuned for next week's episode of Point of Origin. Thank you to all of our guests today on the show, to Jarrett Brandt and Alex Shulkin and Galit Shishaf in the Adelaide Hills of Australia. Special thanks to my business partner who makes all things possible at Whetstone, our co-founder, Melissa Shi. Thanks, Mel. Thank you to Celine Glager, who is our lead producer, to Kat Hong, our editor, to Haven Obasalase, and Quentin LeBeau, our production interns. To our friends at iHeartRadio for helping us bring you this podcast, to Gabrielle Collins, our supervising producer, engineer JJ Pausway, and executive producer Christopher Hasiotis. I'm your host, the Origin Forager, Stephen Satterfield, and we will be back here next week with more from Whetstone Magazine's Point of Origin podcast.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.